Okay, this will be your hour. We'll take your phone calls, perhaps your stories, or perhaps the heart has become an emotional attachment to you. Check in with us when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Howard Martin with us. Howard, give us your websites.
Okay, if you want to become a member of the Global Coherence Initiative, which is free, go to www.glcoherence.org. If you would like to know about the course we have for becoming a coherence builder, go to globalcoherence.org/heart. And that'll get you plenty of information about the things that we're doing, that we're talking about on the show tonight.
When someone participates in this, when do they see results? How long does it take?
Well, it depends upon, I guess, the sincerity of application, but it doesn't take long before you can really make contact with that part of yourself that's already there in the first place. That's the beauty of this whole thing. People have good hearts inside. So I would say if you practice the techniques with a little bit of sincerity, within a couple of weeks, you begin to see some changes. The more you practice, the more you go with it, the more you can really create a new coherence baseline for yourself that you can sustain, and that makes, you know, life a lot easier.
Howard, what do you think is more important, the brain or the heart? We've talked about how they work in unison, but if you had to pick one area.
Well, it's interesting because they do different things. Obviously, we have to have both to be alive. The brain is magnificent. The heart and brain are not in competition in any way, and we have to have the brain to process all the information that we take in. I think what we have to think about now is that, you know, we're trying to access a new field of consciousness with a different type of information, and that's where the heart comes into play. We've done research that, you know, that indicate that the heart is actually receiving information, not just sending it to the brain, but it's actually receiving information as like a big bioreceptor in our body. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that more now. So I guess, you know, I can't say which one would be more important. I think they're both obviously essential, but I do think that the heart's sort of been underappreciated for a long time. And I think now we have to go back to that if we want to really, you know, come into a wholeness understanding of who we are as human beings.
Okay, let's go and take some phone calls for you, Howard, and also probably some stories. We'll go to Columbia, Missouri to get things going east of the Rockies. Bradley, go ahead.
Yeah.
Hi.
Have you ever heard of something called the noosphere? And I wonder if that has something to do with these connections between people's hearts and the magnetic field and these trumpet sounds.
No, Bradley, explain it to me just a little bit. I haven't heard about it exactly, but I may can reference something about it if you explain it to me a little.
Well, I think what I read was it was like it's this idea that in 2012, this new layer is going to form in our atmosphere that's like sort of a telepathic connection between everyone and sort of the planet itself becoming conscious.
Well, I think it makes sense. I haven't really heard about that in great detail, but I think we are coming into, you know, some changes in the Earth itself. I mean, this shift that we're going through now is not just about us as people. It's about the entire Earth. It's about even beyond the Earth into the systems beyond the Earth. So we may see changes that can be measured in the way in which you're talking about it in the neurosphere. The neurosphere in general is about a morphogenetic field, really. And that's another science that relates more to quantum physics, and I think that there are some interesting possibilities there of seeing a change in those fields as we go into this era of the shift. Whether it happens in 2012 or not is really the question. I see 2012 as a very important year in our choice points and a very important year in this era that we're going through right now, but not as just the only year. I mean, it's been years preceding it, and there'll be many years after it that really form this time period, this little window of time that we're in, where we are going through this dynamic change in consciousness.
Howard, do you think that moments of strife cause people to get a little more emotional, heart-wise?
Yeah, they sure do. I mean, a lot of people are going through that now because there's a lot of strife. And when they go through strife, it triggers a whole lot of emotions in the body. There's physiological effects from these emotions that can impact our health and a lot of things. You can generically call that stress, but what stress is really emotional responses to the events that are occurring in life. And so when we go through these hard times, we're going to feel, you know, a lot of sadness sometimes. We can feel feelings of depression, certainly anxiety, which is, you know, huge right now for many, many people. And that's all part of what we're going through. You know, we're trying to realign ourselves with something new. And there's an anxiousness and sometimes a very sad and depressed feeling that can be associated with that.
How did you get involved in this study?
You know, as a young man, I had some realizations, you know, that that were important for me. That, you know, I didn't understand at the time. I was only about 21, but I began to have these realizations and feelings. One of those was that life was about continuous growth. When I began to look at life and look at nature and things, it looked to me as if we were all about growing, changing, adapting, and that sort of thing, and that's what life should be about. So I made a commitment, even back then, that my life was going to be about that, one way or another, regardless of what I did for a living, where I lived, who I was married to, all those things. It had to be about, you know, continuous growth. The other side of that realization was is that my life had to be about service to others. And if I gained anything, then I needed to share it. I needed to give it. And so my life became a process of using, you know, those two things as a guiding compass for me. And of course, you know, I went through all kinds of stuff. When I had those realizations, I was a young rock musician. I had a completely different lifestyle. The values in which, you know, which were being proposed to me through those two things were very much in conflict with the kind of lifestyle I had as a rock musician. So it took a long time and a lot of hard work to get to the place where I learned, you know, to really be true to those things. But today I still feel the same way. I try to grow and change every day, and I do what I can to serve others.
Okay, next up we go to San Francisco. Roger, it's your turn. Thanks, Roger.
Hi.
Hi there.
I was thinking that if one checks the Webster's Dictionary, the similar words, empathy, sympathy, caring, compassion, among them all, the word compassion is unique because it assumes action. That is to say, one cares enough to act. And in my book, thinking happy thoughts does not qualify as action. Maybe that's just me. But so I was wondering where your best, where does action fit within his salvation formula?
Well, that's really good, Roger, and it's very important to understand that, yeah, we have to take these things, we have to act on them. You know, compassion is like care in action is the way I look at it. You know, it's when your care goes into something where you really do something with it. And so we can have all kinds of wonderful altruistic thoughts and feelings about certain things, but what we do with it is really where the difference comes in. And it's called taking it, as Dr. Childry, our founder, says, from sky to street, right from the sky to street, from the philosophical down to the practical. It's how we treat other people. It's what we do when we walk into a restaurant or we walk into the grocery store. How do we treat those people? What kind of feelings do we have for them? And compassion is really an actionable state. You know, it's when we really put out, you know, a certain type of energy to people where we allow for more latitude and less judgment. And that can make all the difference in the world. It's a magical thing, compassion is. And we need more of it in the world today.
Howard, tell me a little bit more about the science behind all this.
The science behind it is intriguing, really. I mean, we've looked at these heart-brain interactions, for one thing, knowing that the heart communicates information, important information, to the brain and the rest of the body in four different ways. We also know, we've learned a lot at HeartMath about the power of positive emotions, its effects, especially on health and physiology. We've done lots of research showing that when you practice HeartMath techniques, like you can learn through, you know, the coherence builders courses that we're giving and things like that, that it really changes the physiology, and you know, we've seen improvements in things like heart arrhythmia. We've seen improvements in things like blood pressure. We've certainly seen changes in psychological programming. I mean, just in our database alone at HeartMath, there's about 20,000 health professionals, mental health professionals, using HeartMath to help treat people. We treat soldiers coming back from, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq. We do a lot of things in that area. And so the research is compelling, showing that when we activate positive emotions and when we use a heart-focused approach for that, that we see changes in our physical health. We also see changes in our psychological health. And so that's the exciting thing about it. That's getting it down to street when we can actually see those changes and see it through the physiology and through the psychological states that we live in.
Do medications affect any of this?
Yeah, they do. For instance, beta blockers, which, you know, are used to treat heart, you know, heart problems, they do change heart rhythm. Now, of course, people need to take these things if they need them, and they need to always do what, you know, what their doctor is suggesting that they do. But there are changes that occur in the body through medications of all kinds. You know, we can fix one thing with a medication, and we can also take it a different direction with the same medication. So it's a tricky, slippery slope on what we should take and what we should not take. But And I trust the doctors on this, and you know, I want to make that clear to all listeners out there that, you know, we can do a lot of things for ourselves. Certainly changes of our own behavior can have a big impact on our health, but always take the doctor's orders on that. We've had many, many people who've improved things, like heart arrhythmia, for example. You know, it's been one of the things we've seen a lot of results in people practicing heart math techniques. But it's at the doctor's discretion whether they change medications and things like that, and we always make that point very clear.
Let's go to Tom in Grand Rapids, Michigan, first-time caller. Tom, you're up.
Oh, good morning, George.
Good morning, Tom. I'm
very grateful to talk to you, and a long-time listener.
Thank you.
And a first-time caller. I go back to the Art Bell days. I used to drive tugboats up and down the West Coast.
Perfect.
I was a chief mate on the mid-watch from midnight to dawn. And became very close to your show at that point. My question for Howard, I hope I don't sound like I'm all over the place, but I am. I had a glioma brain tumor. Before that, 2 years before that, I suffered from a patent ovarian flapper valve that was defective in my heart, which caused stroke symptoms. And I was retired early as a super high voltage lineman, power lineman on the grid, the super high voltage network nationwide. And my question would be the health effects that are created and how they interfere with this whole process, the radio frequency interference, the EMF. The EMPs, I'm sure you're familiar with these, and subsequently, George has had a lot of shows lately with these as being the topics.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, one thing I also would want to say, too, then I'll shut up here, is the impatience of the world today, that was stated at the beginning of your show and the earlier show, the one previous to this, about how everybody's changing so much. And I can't help but to think one of the first questions the neurologists and neurosurgeons asked me about was my cell phone use. I wonder if that's got anything to do with any of our impatience and interfering with us trying to relate to this.
Well, maybe sometimes technology is too much, Howard. What do you think?
I think it's good. I think the caller's got a good point there, and I'll leave the definitive answer to the experts in that field on EMF and that sort of thing. But there's compelling evidence that we have so much so many different kind of fields that we're exposed to all the time because of the type of technology that we have today. And I think that the health effects on that are going to be shown more in the future as we move forward. Here's some good news for everybody though. What we found is that the more coherent we are, the more we're in that heart coherent state, the less things affect us. We have more control over those things when we're in the heart coherent state. So it's a place where we can be, in a sense, more protective when we're in that heart coherent state of whatever fields we happen to be in, because we're exposed to an awful lot of things, and there's no way around that. This is the society that we live in, so we have to find ways to deal with it differently, because we can't just run from those things. One of the best ways I know to offset some of those effects is to be in that heart coherent state, because we create our own energetic field. That field is interfacing with the energetic fields we're exposed to. The more coherent our field is, the less effect those other fields have on us. But I certainly think that, sitting in front of computers all day, using our cell phones all the time, exposed to all kinds of other energetic fields, there's got to be some physiological effect, and I'm not so sure it's all good.
Do you have a case study story, Howard, that you could tell us right now on how this has all affected somebody's life?
Yeah, let me think of stories. We've got so many, George, from many, many, many thousands of people around the world, participate in heart math in one way or another. I'll give you one.
Okay.
There's an author named Joseph Chilton Pierce. Some of the listeners may have heard of him. He was a very famous author back in the 70s, wrote books on children, that kind of thing. An amazing man. He's in his 80s now. And he had been a meditator and lots of things for years, a hardcore meditator. But he had developed, severe arrhythmia. And what arrhythmia is an irregular beating of the heart. He had tachycardia, which is... You can die from that. It's one of the most serious forms of that that there is. He came to HeartMath. He began to learn about our research, and he was really impressed and intrigued by it all. So he took it sincerely, and he started coming to HeartMath courses and things like that, and he began to practice the techniques. In a period of several months, he gave up the meditations that he was doing. He found that, you know, what he wanted to do was do the HeartMath techniques more than the meditations he'd been doing. And as he did that, within a few months, his tachycardia began to decrease significantly. Subsequently, over time, he was taking off most all medication by his physician. And he did it from the inside out. He did it through changing, you know, his own heart coherent state. And he improved tremendously and was off most of his medication. And he's actually very vocal about that. And he's actually said, HeartMath saved my life. There's a quote that he gave us to use anywhere we want to, where he credits HeartMath and the practice of the techniques and actually saving his life. Because you're right, George, that can kill you.
Absolutely. And Greg Braden did not think that this technique could change the mind of an evil person. I want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it really can. I think, you know, we have these neurological patterns that we have that, you know, could be attributed to, like, evil behavior. What we found is the more heart coherent we are, the signals that are running from heart back to brain actually change the neural circuitry in the brain. As that neural circuitry changes, our behavior changes, our values change, what we do changes. And so I've seen huge changes in people, you know, psychologically. Repatterning, you know, old patterns and a lot of different things. And if someone's evil has these patterns within them, they can be changed. The brain itself, where these patterns, you know, reside, is very malleable. It changes all the time. We have some conscious control over that. You run that signal from heart back to brain that's coherent, it changes those neural circuits. So I would, in that context, not agree with Greg on what he said.
Do you find that one person could alter the course of events as well as many?
Yes, that's the point of the coherence builders, really, because what I found is that, and what I've seen in society, is that when you have a person that's operating in another level of, we'll just generically call it coherence, they have the ability to impact a whole lot of other people. The reason for that is coherence is more potent, it's more focused. It's kind of like the difference between a laser and diffused light. Diffused light, like I'm sitting under now, is diffused by intention. It's designed to sort of spread around the room and light the room up. If you took that same light source and you focused it into a laser, it could actually burn a hole through this floor. So coherence works that way. Coherence is much more focused and efficient and powerful.
Well, see, I always thought, Howard, that the one was worth as much as the many, if we can somewhat coin a phrase from Spock. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Scott Creighton joins us as we talk about his work, The Giza Prophecy. Looking forward to that, so make sure you're part of that program. When we come back in just a moment with Howard Martin, we will take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Howard Martin, I'm fascinated with the term heart intelligence. It's almost as if the heart itself is its own brain, isn't it?
Yeah, it has a very complex nervous system in it, George. And then the researchers that study it through the field of neurocardiology actually call it the brain and the heart. But it goes beyond the physical heart. It really gets into the energetic heart, you know, which you've talked about a little bit on your show tonight, about this energetic field produced by the heart surrounding us in 360 degrees. A lot of information is being exchanged in that field, and the research that we're endeavoring in now is, how does that field affect the field of the brain? How does my field affect the field of another? How does the field produced by all the hearts in the world affect the fields of the planet? And that's the really exciting new research that we're doing. But it is intelligent. It really gives us, you know, some internal guidance that I think is useful, you know, as we navigate life.
When we hear phrases like, be still my beating heart, or you broke my heart, what does that mean? Because I actually believe now, when you put this in context with everything, the heart is this very important organ within your body, not just to keep you going, but because of these emotions. But how did they know this? How did they say things like that? How did they know that the heart was the place where, let's say, love would originate from?
Well, it's I think it was an intuitive connection to that. It got lost along the way. If you look at the ancient civilizations, they talked about it that way. And, you know, the earliest writings I've seen on heart go back 4,500 years ago. The ancient Chinese medicine, they talked about the heart as being the source of the soul. and pumping its vital rhythmic messages through the veins and arteries. There's all kinds of references that these ancient civilizations had to heart. And I think that, you know, things were less cluttered for them. They had this intuitive connection to it, and they actually, you know, saw it as an intelligent part in their system. It was in the late 1500s that an English physician, Dr. William Harvey, actually did some research that showed that the heart was this four-chambered organ pumping blood. And people that have reported on his work have said that when Harvey's work was published, that heart lost its thought, and thought lost its heart.
Huh. I love it. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. Ray is in Houston, Texas. Hey, Ray, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, George, and good morning, Howard. And I have to say that it is a complete honor to talk to both of you guys.
Well, thank you.
This is what I wanted to say. I've had a couple of minutes to actually gather my thoughts. When I was talking to the producer, I was kind of all over the place. But we've been talking a lot tonight about heart and about change and about the way the heart has its own nervous system and basically is the main organ in the body that runs the body. I believe that. We live on a living planet. And what my subject is that I wanted to basically a comment, maybe you guys could have some comments on it too, is about a week ago you had a lady on that was talking about the noises, the trumpet-like noises.
Right. Lori Toy.
I firmly believe that the people that are hearing this are closer to the goal that Mr. Howard is trying to get to have a coherent heart. I believe that these people are more in tune to the changes that are happening, not only within ourselves and our own conscious, but throughout the world itself. I believe that these people that are hearing this, and I've experienced some stuff too, and we'll get into that later or not or whatever. But what my whole point is this, is these people, everyone that you talk to that was talking about those trumpet noises that they were hearing were scared.
Yes, they were. And that was those reports were from Linda Moltenhau, by the way.
Yes, so. yes, they were. Okay. There's no reason to fear it. It's something wonderful. They are in tune. They are the advanced people, the people that can teach everyone else to open their heart up and to hear the living planet and the noises and experience the life changes that are going to be taking place over the next 6 months, 6 to 8 months, a year, however long it takes. I've been trying to call you and talk to you about this since I heard Ms. Howell on that show.
Yep.
It's amazing. Everything is connected, and it just boggles my mind that you guys are talking about this with that subject that happened last week, because it's all connected. These people are hearing our living earth and the changes, whether you go into different dimensions on a spiritual level, on a scientific level, on a conscious level, whatever, they're all connected, and it's a wonderful thing.
Well said, Ray. Well said indeed. Howard, you know, you don't have that much exposure to these sounds that we've been talking about over the last few days on this program, but there's something weird going on here.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about that. So I can't really comment on it unless you want to fill me in a little bit, but sounds intriguing.
There's not much to fill you in. People are just hearing weird trumpet-type sounds coming from everywhere.
Interesting.
And it's in certain areas. It's not all over the place.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said about the sonics of the universe, in a sense. You know, there's, you know, about sound in general that we're just beginning to come into, maybe to actually hearing or coming into contact with. It's all part of the new intelligence, and it's unfolding now. We're going to find new capacities within all of us as we go through this changing time. We are changing as human beings. I do think that Ray's onto it, that heart's got a lot to do with that. You know, I think that when we come into new intelligence, whether it comes in from off-planet exposure or other ways, we're going to find that it's got a lot to do about heart and always has. And I think we intuitively know this. We sense it within ourselves.
What do some hardcore scientists say about this? About your work?
Well, we've been pretty lucky with the scientists, actually, that we've gotten a lot of credibility from science itself. We've been published in journals like the American Journal of Cardiology, for example, on our work. And I think it's because the way our researchers have gone about it. We could have been more phenomenalistic, you know, in what we did. We could have made a lot of claims earlier. We could have approached it from a more of a cosmic science, you know, perspective. But we built it from the ground up. We started looking at physiology first, and we became leaders and pioneers in understanding these heart rhythms. It's called heart rate variability analysis. And that's where we got a lot of our credibility. So we haven't run into a lot of problems. Now, the hypothesis that we have with the Global Coherence Initiative is that, you know, mass human emotion is affecting these fields. Now, some scientists are going to quarrel with us, saying that, you know, from a Newtonian physics perspective, there's no way that we put out enough amplitude or whatever to impact these fields. Other scientists think, that's not true. From the perspective of quantum physics, we are interacting with these fields all the time. So I think as we unfold this, it'll be an interesting debate. The better we are in our research, you know, it may take more time to do it this way, but the better we are at what we do, the more we actually prove empirically before making claims, the more solid this is going to be. And what I hope for is that we have irrefutable, you know, proof before it's all said and done that the things that we hypothesize are true. Of course, science has to be done, you know, with a neutrality to it. What if it's not true? I think it is, and I think we're going to prove that before it's over.
Back to Cheryl in Phoenix now, west of the Rockies. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hi. What a wonderful show. Thank you both.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I had brain surgery in 1994 for a meningioma brain tumor the size of an orange. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, since then, I haven't been able to work. I have had, you know, I sleep like an hour or two a night, and I just am having a lot of grief because I can't go back to work because I'm just really not able to function on that little sleep, which is actually fortunate to listen to this show. But and I'm just wondering about this heartache I have. Is it hindering my brain from healing, or is it affecting my brain because of the heartache? I'm very sad. I was a massage therapist and taught energy work and every day helped people, which was just a delight.
Well, I'm sure the heartache doesn't help, Howard. I'm sure it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. But first, let me say, Cheryl, my heart goes out to you, darling, for what you know, what you've had to deal with there. Mm. I can hear in your voice that you got a sweetheart.
Oh, thank you.
It's always there, whether you feel, you know, sad about this or not, whether you feel, you know, the things that you feel, you know, you got that heart in there. You just go back to that. You find that soft place right inside yourself because you got it there. I can hear it in your voice.
Oh, thank you. I do. I love helping people and teaching people to help themselves. And it's very hard to not be in that process. And I still do, obviously. I run into people and have family and friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate to be able to share on some level, but
right. It
is very hard. Is there anything you could suggest for me to...
I'm gonna suggest something really good for you. We have heart math coaches that are, you know, around the world in the country. And there's one, if you go to the heartmath.com site, you look at the one-on-one providers, it's called, and you'll see a list of people. There's a woman named Jasmina on there. I can't remember her last name. Starts with an A. She's a heart math coach. She had a brain tumor, and she actually overcame that brain tumor, cured that brain tumor. And so it could be she could be very helpful to you because she's had a similar experience.
Okay.
And that could be helpful to you. That's the best thing I can tell you right now. But the other thing, as I said earlier, is just, you know, try to find that soft place inside yourself because you got it in there.
Remember that old song, You've Gotta Have Heart?
That's right.
It's a classic. And it means a lot if you listen to the words. Robin in Oakland, California. Go ahead, Robin. Thanks.
Oh, George and Howard, it's such a blessing to talk to both of you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
You are so wonderful. I can so relate to the lovely lady who was speaking before. I also am in the same situation in terms of I no longer am able to work. I can't plan ahead, having cared for so many people that I midwifed to the next life, you know, how, George, how would you feel if you lost your daily planner?
Really? I don't know.
You'd be lost.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you turn into this person where you can't plan anything. because you can only work, you know, plan the next 5 minutes, because that's what you get. Howard, I wanted to thank you very much for the exercise that you just gave. And you can do that. I've been doing it since you gave it to me on the radio. And you can do this continually.
Sure can. That's right.
It's incredibly healing. I had a friend who went through open heart surgery recently, and they stopped his heart 3 times in a 10-hour operation.
3 times? Wow, 10 hours.
Wow. Yes, and so this will be a great help to him when he comes back home here. And the other thing I wanted to say was, George, our previous guest, and also I know with Howard, were right on the button with the feeling after 9/11, where it was as if the whole world opened up their heart, and we all became one family after 9/11.
Yeah, well, not the whole world, but some.
Well, close, you know, I mean, to see.
At least
people,
in this country.
Well, to see people in England and all over lighting candles and putting them out in front of the American embassies all over. And being Irish, I wanted to just invite everyone to dinner and say, now would be a good time to sit down and eat and talk. It's very difficult to argue over the dinner table.
Yeah, indeed it has. Robin, thanks. We're almost out of time. We're going to take one or two more calls to go. But, Howard, what's the next step for your project? What do you do?
Well, I'd like people to consider just becoming a member of the Global Coherence Initiative. I've got the site up now. There's a little counter at the bottom. I've seen it changing where people are joining. It's glcoherence.org. It's something you can do for free. You can join a community of people who are doing this type of work. If that's something that appeals to you and the things that I've said tonight, if you really want to learn how to be more heart coherent, then again, we do have the Shift to the Heart, you know, course that we're given, set up especially for creating the coherence builders, and that's the glcoherence.org/heart page that you go to learn more about all of that. Those are next steps, but the main thing is whether you do any of that or not, it's just to acknowledge within yourself that you have this intelligence inside you. You've had it all along. It's never really gone away. We go away from it, but it's always there for us, and you can always return to that place, and especially go there now during these changing times to find that sense of self-security and give yourself another level of your own personal empowerment that you can make changes in your life that are going to benefit you and others. That's something anybody can do. You all have that. And I'll just very briefly state that technique again that the previous caller mentioned. Heart focus breathing, heart feeling. One of the many heart math techniques, but a simple one we can all do. So the next step is to acknowledge and appreciate this part of yourself that you have and to bring it into your daily life. And then there are other things that I mentioned through the websites, et cetera, that you can do more of. But join the community, the Global Coherence Initiative. It's a good group. 80 people from 85 countries around the world are all making an effort to use their hearts to make some changes.
All right, next up we go to San Diego. Steve, we got a quick moment for you. Go ahead. Steven? Well, Steven's not there anymore, but Charlie in Dallas might be. Hi, Charlie.
Hello. Howard, contemporary medicine has a theory that the heart is the pump pushing blood throughout the circulatory system, whereas I think ancient medicine had a theory that blood is the powering mechanism that powers the blood through the system, and that the heart is simply a four-chamber valve. What do you think?
I think that what the Chinese were saying is it's, you know, what we generically can call spirit, you know, or soul, is pushing the blood, you know, through the body, and that the heart is acting as a pump. We know that the heart is a cardiovascular organ, and it's pumping blood through the circulatory system. That's, you know, that's an obvious function.
That's obvious,
it, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, where's the cause of all that? You know, I'll give you one thing to think about. Even with all our modern science today, scientists still cannot tell us why the heart starts beating. They don't know.
Let's just hope it never stops.
That's right.
Unfortunately, it will. I'm amazed though at all the slogans that are tied into the heart, you know, my bleeding heart, everything. Yeah. It's all tied to the heart, isn't it?
It sure is. We say it all the time and we don't even think about what we're saying.
Howard, one more time as we leave the book, The Heart Math Solution, available where?
Amazon.com.
Websites are?
glcoherence.org and glcoherence.org/heart.
All right, Howard, thanks and good luck to you.
George, thank you so much. Appreciate all you're doing for the man that you are.
Howard Martin, a two-part program tonight with Greg Braden as well, as we talked about just things that are affecting us within deep into our core. On our next Coast to Coast program, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about the Giza Pyramid Prophecies with Steve Creighton. So make sure you're part of that program as well. We've got a great week of programs for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.